Radio.
Sports Outreach in East Timor. A talk by Sandra Allen Craig and Deacon Anthony Hill at the Australian Catholic Youth Festival 2015, held at the Adelaide Convention Centre.
Thank you for coming. Thank you for coming and being curious about how sport can be an outreach program and the opportunities that are out there for people like yourselves. So I'm Sandy Allen Craig and this is Deacon Anthony Hill, and we're going to talk to you about two programs that we've been involved in, two pretty different programs. We met in Rome this year, sounds exotic. I was speaking at a sports seminar run by the Vatican. So the Vatican has, as part of the Pontifical Council for the Laity, has a section called the Church and Sport. And they contacted me about coming to talk about the program that I'm involved in through Australian Catholic University. And Anthony was also at that seminar. So from Italy to Adelaide. So it was a bit of fun. The program that I'm involved in is through Australian Catholic University. So I'm a lecturer in exercise science at the Australian Catholic University, and I'm actually in charge of all the outdoor education and outdoor leadership. So I'm in charge of the units, and I train students to be outdoor education teachers, outdoor ed leaders, adventure therapists, camp directors, all that sort of stuff. But because I'm used to taking students into remote areas and living sometimes in tough conditions, I put my hand up to be involved in a program when we were approached by some Salesian brothers from Timor about violence in the community, and they wanted some help. So that's how the story starts. So my area of expertise was not soccer, it wasn't sport outreach. It was actually about taking people out of their comfort zones, and that's what we did with some students from Australian Catholic University that were exercise science students, and from that a huge program has bloomed, which is about social justice, about bringing skills to enable peace in communities, and we're working on making it a sustainable program. So the program is called Future in Youth, and its focus is on engaging youth as an outreach program, and it's focused on providing health, well-being and life skills to the youth of Timor-Leste. And it's run in Bacau, which is the largest village outside Dili in Timor. And I'll talk to you a little bit more about Timor and where it is. Some of you here have already had a chat. Your schools are involved in programs in Timor-Leste. And I've actually bumped into some people from those schools while I've been in this village. So the village is quite a needy area and a good spot for outreach. So we look at health, well-being and life skills, and the program is focused on three areas. So, and it sounds very organised. It didn't start like this, and I'll talk to you a little bit about how it starts. But we've now developed the program so that we have coach education for volunteers and for teachers in schools. We actually have the sport education program, which is how the program started. And we have a community education, which gives leaderships to community members. Because what we've found, we've been running it for 6 years, but what we've found is we don't want to come in, run this amazing program and leave nothing for them to build on. So it's now become a sort of three-pronged program. So in the last 6 years, we were there in July again this year, and as I speak now, my counterpart is back in Timor-Leste to run the... we're running a series of finals weeks and grand finals, and they have been training and coaching the kids from Bacau while we haven't been there. And that doesn't sound like much from the point of view that we are, but it's a huge step for the people of Bacau. So we've had about 5,000 kids and about 300 volunteer coaches been involved in the program over the 6 years since it started. So how did it start? It started by a Salesian brother who was based in Bacau, who contacted a friend of his who worked at Australian Catholic University and said, "We have real problems with violence in the community from the young kids." Very young kids were getting involved in martial arts gangs, because they had nothing to do. And I'll explain why they had nothing to do. And they came. This Salesian brother who works full time at the university came to exercise science and said, "You guys are sporty. Can we run some programs? Can we do some sport with these guys?" And the we said yes. And I'll explain a little bit how that worked in a minute. So just to give you a background for those of you who don't know about Timor Leste, it is one of our closest neighbours. It's a 50-minute flight from Darwin, so very, very close, and a completely different world, completely. So it's had a pretty turbulent history. It gained independence in 2002, so not long ago, really. It was has been occupied for over 400 years, a whole series of different things, but the Portuguese for most of that time until 1976-77. When they withdrew to give Timor-Leste independence, and within a very short amount of time, Indonesia invaded Timor-Leste, almost with the big countries like Australia and America and a few others standing by and letting it happen. And that's a whole other political component that exacerbated the problems, which is why we, you know, find ourselves in Timor-Leste contributing. We owe the Australian nation. It really has a lot to answer for and has done a lot in looking after Timor-Leste since that time. So in 1999, the Indonesians withdrew from Timor, but as they went, they destroyed all the infrastructure. So they used tanks, you know, army tanks, is that the right word? They crushed all the water pipes, they lit and burnt a lot of the schools. And it was called the Scorched Earth Policy, and you could see the smoke and all the rest of it from space. So they destroyed a massive amount of infrastructure, and in that infrastructure they destroyed schools. So it was only a few years ago. We've been going over there for 6 years. The UN only left 2.5 years ago. So it's a very, very new nation. 95% of the schools were destroyed. However, the population of Timor, over there's 53% that are under the age of 18. And in fact, there was a lot of older people that were killed. It's only got a small population of about a million and a half, and most of them are very young. So you have not many schools and a very young population. So 37% live below the poverty line. These photos, I took these this year, but this is common. These are their homes. There's very rarely anything. There's some that are a little bit more modern than that. Most of them are made, if they're not made thatched or by tin, they're made by hand-pressed Besser bricks, and they've got a press and they put the gravel in and they press those bricks themselves. So that's 50 minutes from Australia. So we're talking a very different level of standard of living. 50% of the population is illiterate, 40% is malnourished, and the life expectancy is 62. Also, 92% of the population is Catholic. So back to the violence outbreaks. So when this happened, what was happening is the schools run for, the kids get to go for half a day, but they don't have enough school or space to run school for the whole day. So you have a whole lot of kids with nothing to do. So they were joining martial arts gangs and throwing stones. This doesn't sound very serious particularly, but it was escalating. And the issue was that the youth weren't engaged. It's improving now. School hours are becoming longer and obviously infrastructure is building. But that was the main issue. So the first year we went, we just arrived with 100 soccer balls, some water bottles, and 10 enthusiastic exercise science students from ACU in Melbourne. And we just started kicking soccer balls around street corners and kids gathered. They mainly kick, they fill water bottles up with stones and that's their balls. So baller, 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 that's what they want. They want soccer balls from us. That was a big thing. And over the month that we spent there, we just ended up with a huge following of kids who had nothing to do, who were just keen to play some soccer. But it became too big for us. We had 10 students and two staff, and 600 kids. So we were a bit overwhelmed, and so we grabbed people like yourself that were slightly older Timorese kids and said, can you help? They don't speak English. We didn't speak any Tetom. So that was interesting, but we were keen and they were keen. And so we started to teach them a little bit about how to run a drill or a modified game or something like that, so that it had a bit, little bit of organisation. Sometimes we'd turn up to an oval and we'd get stones thrown at us because they didn't want us on that oval. And so when we first started, it was pretty raw, but we really saw a need and we decided that this is something that we really wanted to continue to be involved with. And the Vice Chancellor of the university was very passionate that this was a program to be supported. He put some of his own money in and we sought sponsors for all sorts of different people, and people were very enthusiastic. So the next year, that was in November, and the next year we went over in July and thought, right, if we're going to have this sort of turn up of kids, we need to train coaches. So people like yourselves that were Timorese, we said, come along, we'll pay you $2 a day, which was a lot of money, for your transport to get there. So it's voluntary, but you know, there's this transport that we will cover your transport cost. And $2 sounds like nothing, but it's about 50 cents for a microlet ride. So it enabled them to get to and from the coaching, and then a little bit of extra if they needed to travel further. So we ran a program in July for coaching them, and then we came back again the following November. And then the preceding years, we've expanded that program so that we've run a training program for a week, and then after the week of training the coaches, we've then run a program to engage the youth for 2 weeks, and then that's changed in the last couple of years to become more sustainable, and I'll explain that in a minute. So soccer was the football, as they call it, of course, was the sport that was chosen because that was the passion of the nation. Their football, they love football and they're very, very good at it, and they play it on any bit of dirt, swamp, paddock, rice field, wherever they can. We trained the coaches, as I said, and gave them a number of skills that would enable them to be able to help. You've got to imagine, we've got a field the size of this room with 500 kids under the age of 12. So we needed help. And so these volunteer coaches didn't really have any, they were good at playing soccer, but they didn't have any of the normal organisational skills. So we engaged them and trained them. And the premise behind that initially was to meet our needs, but then we realised that it was actually empowering the coaches and giving them skills that they could then give back to their community. And that's about social inclusion. And this program has very much become a program that enables social inclusion. And by educating the coaches, we help the development of the people, not just engaging the youth that were involved in the violence. So it expanded to be much more than we originally planned to be. We also needed the community to be involved because we didn't know exactly what they wanted, what their views were, how they would want us to go about things, how their culture was in terms of how we were behaving. It's quite a conservative culture. So, for example, you wouldn't ask somebody to come to something without formally sending them a letter. So that just gives you an idea of the things that we had to try and learn and find out about. So this year was huge for us because we felt that we really, if we wanted to make it sustainable, we had to actually not just have the relationship with people from the community, but we had to give them, let's call it, the power. So we asked and chatted and talked to lots of people and eventually developed a steering committee. And that steering committee guided us because originally we were coming over training the coaches, bringing the exercise science students and running the program and then leaving. But that's a bit like a circus coming to town and then leaving, and then the next year you do it again. But what does that give the community other than a great experience for 3 weeks? It doesn't give them the skills to be able to eventually run those programs themselves. So after a lot of listening and thinking and talking, the community said to us what we really want to focus on is having a football program for kids under 12. We need your help. We need balls. We need uniforms. We need water bottles. We need goals. We need sashes for training. We need cones. We need money to pay the coaches for transport. But we were ready to say, you tell us what you want. We're just going to be one voice on your committee and we will listen to what you want. So they this year, which was a big step for all of us, decided that they were going to start the Bacow Junior Football League, and the steering committee were the people that were involved in deciding how that would work. For example, every year we went back, we took thousands, 2.5 tonnes of gear, 200 soccer balls, 1,000 water bottles, 1,000 T-shirts, uniforms, all that sort of stuff. And we'd leave it for them to train, and the next year we'd go back and there was none of it left. So to the Timorese people, this was a huge embarrassment because it showed to them that was disrespectful, that we were bringing that gear and then it was not, we were leaving it for them to train their kids, and when we came back it was all gone. So they felt that that was showing disrespect to us as Malai. Malai means foreigner. And so the steering committee came up with the idea that this was embarrassing for us. We bring all this equipment, we donate all this stuff, and that we needed a better structure. So that they suggested that we not only train volunteers, but we train the sports teachers and the teachers from the school. And they've had very little training in terms of running sporting programs, and I'll talk to you about that in a minute. So this steering committee has been a big step this year towards giving the community power through a sport program to develop their own community and to develop their own leadership skills. So the ACU students, there's a number of programs that Australian Catholic University runs. This is one of them and it's the biggest. The others are a midwifery program for the midwifery students. They go over there and go out to villages and talk about train people to be a birthing assistants. There's a paramedic program that looks at helping the ambulance and the paramedics who have just... One kid broke his arm and we took him to the hospital. There's no pain relief. We gave him some Panadol from our... like a tablet of Panadol. You go to a hospital, there's nothing. So these programs, I'm diverging here, but the programs that Australian Catholic University run with the paramedic students, the nursing students, midwifery students and us for exercise science are working to improve a whole lot of areas, but we also bring resources with us, which are very valued. So the ACU students, we've taken between 6 and 10 ACU students every year, and they live there for 3 weeks while they train the coaches and then work with the coaches running the program with the students. It's a huge experience for most of them. We live together in a small little guest house. It's rough at times. Inevitably, we all get sick, even with the best of care. At some stage in that 3 weeks, we get sick. They have to teach and work with a coach, and they don't have... provide TETM lessons for the students, but really what they need to know is how do you say to the coach, pass the ball, stop the ball, kick, goal, sit down, those sorts of things. And they wear lanyards like this, and we have the basic TETM words in there. But then socially, when we're walking around the town, you want to be able to say bon dia, bon noite, good night, good evening, how are you, all those sorts of greetings. So it's a huge experience for the students, plus they're living with each other in a small confined area with bathrooms that probably don't have, you know, proper drainage and toilets that don't flush and just a whole lot of things that are different to home. I feel very privileged that a lot of my outdoor leadership students, my outdoor education students that are majoring in that, tend to apply. And I think that's because they're up for a challenge and they're happy to live a little bit rough. So there's normally quite a lot of the exercise science students that are majoring in outdoor leadership that tend to apply. But they all come back talking about how the experience has changed their lives. So the coach training program. We now this year we're training the sport teachers as well. So the sport teachers and the coaches, we do personal leadership skills and we talk about running programs with students, how to present yourself well, what sort of leadership skills you need, etc. We give them group management skills. We teach them how to run skills and drills. We do skill progression and training. We do how to run and organise a program. We do development and teaching skills. These are all things that they haven't covered before. Professional presentation skills. There's always a joke about team or time. So if you say we're going to meet at a soccer pitch at 3 and the program's going to start by 3:30, if you've got it running by 4:30 and everybody's turned up, you're doing pretty well. So we talked a lot about, you know, punctuality, presentation, and we provide them. This year they wanted uniforms the same as ours, which were polo shirts and different caps and different shorts, and fair enough. So they got not T-shirts but polo shirts this year. We also ran this year a refereeing course, so they actually got a qualification as a referee, which they were very keen to get qualifications and certifications. It's very important for them. And if we give them a certificate, you'll find that the next year they'll come and show you that they've still got that certificate. So that education side of it's really important. We also go through warm-up skills and drills. They don't need warm-ups. It's stinking hot. Stinking hot. But anyhow, we do stretching and warm-up drills, how to run and manage a tournament. And all through that, we're teaching codes of behaviour, which are fun, fair and respect. So we're branding everything. So on those water bottles and on their T-shirts are the words which are equivalent to fun, fair and respect. And if a kid's cheating or whatever, we'll pull them up and we'll point to his T-shirt and say, no, not fair, that's not correct. So that we are trying to talk about fair play and teach those as we go along. And the kids all get their water bottles and every kid gets a T-shirt. And sometimes you turn up and the kids have got the T-shirts from 6 years ago and they've grown a bit and the T-shirts are looking pretty small and all the rest of it. To enable them to sort of get the idea of the importance of fun, fair and respect and health and wellbeing, we ask the coaches to agree to these codes of behaviour, that every child should enjoy the game, that they are rewarded for their effort, that it's ensured that they play fairly and that everybody gets an equal chance. So in Timor, a lot of the time, the best, like anywhere, the best kids on the field get the most time, and we're saying no, this is about participation and being engaged and having fun. And they get recognition for their participating, the coaches, in that program. Last year, they had been saying for a number of years that they really wanted to get a qualification, like who is ACU, who's Australian Catholic University, and yes, they're coaching us and we're learning good skills, but that's not FIFA. Now, we know that that's not FIFA, and they were very keen as a soccer nation, a football nation, to get FIFA along. And after much negotiation, we got a coach out from Manila, and he ran a level one accreditation course for FIFA. It was a huge event for Bacow because it was the first time ever that FIFA had been involved. We worked with the East Timorese Football Federation and with FIFA to run this coaching program. And they were very, very grateful. Bacow is about 4 hours drive on a pretty precipitous road. It's the second biggest village in Timor, and they had never had that sort of attention for their soccer, but they've got quite a number of national players come from this village. So the FIFA program was a huge success and a very significant event. And then last year, with an honours student, we decided we needed to look and see if some of the things that we were hoping to achieve from the program were actually happening. Ultimately, we want to be able to have this program run without Australian Catholic University turning up, if possible. I mean, we don't want to not turn up, and the students get an amazing experience, but you need to be able to empower the people to have the opportunity and the skills to be able to run these things themselves. But we did a research program, and we looked at and spoke to a number of the coaches and community leaders about what they felt they got out of the program. And they basically said that they felt that they became a better coach, that they were able to play football with the children, and they had leadership skills, and they increased their capacity to share those skills with the community, which is very important for us. So you've got to remember, we didn't teach them how to play soccer or football because they're very, very good soccer players anyhow. So the program really was about developing skills for this community. So through the football program, this is some of the comments that were made, and I'll just run through these quickly. But through football games, we would know one another better and be friends regardless of where we're from. The football game unites us. Now, you've got to remember the reason we went there in the first place was because there was violence in the community, and one of the main issues of the violence was fighting between Newtown and Old Town of Bacow. And now these kids were playing together on teams in soccer. So that was a huge step because now they were getting to know their neighbours and realising that they weren't so bad. It's children are the important seeds of Timor-Leste even in football, which talks about looking into the future and the skills that they have. I look forward to voluntarily applying what I have learned, and I feel the need to share this experience for the good of others. And that's about developing community leadership. And this one here is about love and joy and respect, and it's about promoting love and joy and respect. And I don't think, we talk about love and joy and respect, but not at the same intensity as if you spend time in Timor-Leste, and that's because they've been at war for such a long time, and peace is really, really important to them, and they use the word peace in their language in a way that we don't use it. And it's very precious and very important to them. We want to apply what we've learnt to bring happiness to my community, to orient my community to a better future. That is what everyone in the community wants. So it becomes more than just engaging kids in soccer or football. I shall use these skills to create tranquility, peace and stability in the society. And there's that word peace that occurs again. And I want to apply what I've learned to bring happiness to my community. So these were unprompted responses about what they felt they were getting out of the program. And this one, the experience of the future in youth so far, the training and the development of the coaches is the cornerstone in the development of the people of the community. So they're seeing it as a real opportunity to become leaders. So social inclusion is really underlying this program, and that's how it's emerged. It wasn't necessarily the intentions, but and social inclusion is about people feeling valued, their differences being respected, and their basic needs being met. And we hope that the Future and Youth program that we've been running and will continue to run until they will be able to run it themselves and is offering them an opportunity to have that social inclusion. And I'd just like to finish with this video, if Jarrah up the back can get that going for me, which just shows...
Are these on? They are. Excellent. I'm going to talk from here and I'm a wanderer, so I'll then go to the mic. But let's all jump up and have a stretch, because I've got a question to ask for you and we'll stage it. But there's four words. You saw on the program four words there, wasn't it? It was East Timor, Timor-Leste was one of them, sport and outreach. So sports, outreach, Timor-Leste. Think about what is the most important. What was the most important reason? What was that word that grabbed you most? Was it sport? Was it outreach? Was it Timor-Leste? Once you've decided that, when I say your word, if you could just sit down, this is going to give me a help for knowing what I want to talk about. Sports. Outreach. Timor-Leste. Beautiful, beautiful. Timor, just quickly on Timor-Leste, I had the beauty of meeting, because I suppose most of us are all Catholics here, and I'm Deacon Anthony Hill. I'm Diocesan Director of Catholic Mission. So that's the Catholic Mission does the work of the Pontifical Mission Societies here in Australia. Timor-Leste, we've had a big to-do with Timor-Leste. And we heard that interesting stat, 92% of the people are Catholics. Yet prior to the invasion, it was 23%. So in 25 years, the population went from 23% Catholic up to 92%. Abel Gutierrez is the ambassador here for Timor-Leste in Australia, and he was telling me, he told me that statistic, that it had gone from 23% up to 92%. And he said, do you know why? Why? When we were being invaded, he said, when we as a people were being invaded, when our country was being destroyed as people were leaving, it was Catholics under Catholic mission that stood by us side by side. So when the governments weren't there, it was Catholics, because of their moral convictions, that stood side by side with them and said, this is wrong. Over the 25 years, people have remembered that and they said, why would the people do that? Because they believe in Jesus Christ. I think we're talking about the power of Jesus Christ later on. But the power of Jesus Christ commissioned Catholics to be there. They saw that. They said, we want to know. We want to know about that Jesus Christ. We want to know about Catholicism. And it's gone from 23% up to 92%. That's what the ambassador of Timor-Leste told me. We should be very proud, even though we hear of those awful things that our church does and that people in our church make mistakes we have to be held accountable for, but we should never forget the fantastic things that we do as well. Part of your being here, wanting to know about Timor-Leste, wanting to know about outreach and what is outreach all about, is something that I thank you for. Outreach, what is outreach? Yep. Yeah, so outreach can be part of that, isn't it? It's going out, it's reaching out, and it is it probably outreach, community service may be embraced in part of your outreach, but it's more. Outreach is more. And I like to explain it, and I'm not going to, we haven't got it for ages. But in the beginning, what do scientists tell us? This is what do scientists tell us? How did the universe or the cosmos as we know it, how did it come to be? 13.6 billion years ago, wasn't it, they reckon? 13.8, I've been corrected, thank you. He's younger than me, he's been at school a lot earlier, so it's 13.8, all right, I'll go with that, 13.8 years ago. From a single plurality, it all pulled together. They said there was a whole lot of pressure. Scientists try to tell us nothing has more than nothing. That's not my definition of nothing. But anyway, there was nothing, and there became a whole lot of pressurised, a whole lot of energised, and then it went bang, out, didn't it? Is that right? Yeah. Well, that sits fine with our Christian religion. What's the most moving energy within our existence? Love. Love molds hearts, doesn't it? It can bend the most awful heart or the most bent heart. Remember, well, you probably wouldn't, but Marcos, the president, had his army with tanks pointed at Filipino people. They were going to shoot the Filipino people because they weren't obeying what President Marcos wanted them. And the Filipino people were out there in love. And the soldiers who were starving, the Filipino people were offering them food. And love melted their hearts. And they turned from President Marcos, and President Marcos was overthrown. Love. Love is the most incredible energy. What does it say in John's Gospel? God is love. So right at the very beginning, there was that pressure, that love, the Trinitarian love that coexisted, and bang, it boomed out. The scientists tell us there was a massive explosion, wasn't it? Or the Big Bang. Not very scientific, really. But anyway, that's what they tell us. There was a big explosion out. It went out, outreach. And everything that was created within has been slowly gathered in. And you have a look at the stars, the birth of the stars, the death of the stars. They say stardust all formed and fell down into the liquid water through the processes of the 13.8 billion years. Through the processes, we get things of breaking down, regathering in, being called gathered in and being made anew. This is the action of God. God's action is to pull in, expand out, outreach, pulling in, expanding out, gathering people into love, pulling them in to be community. You from all over Australia have travelled all here to be refreshed, brought back into love, be refreshed, and then sent out, back out, to go back out to your communities in outreach. This is the outreach. This is of God. And this is why this is so beautiful. How can sport be part of that? Beg your pardon? Common interest. Absolutely. Fantastic. All the guys who had hatred, division, were brought together, weren't they? Got on together, played together, worked together, Can you still hear me? Yeah? Excellent. Because I can talk. If I talk too long, just wind me up and say it's time to sit down. But all people have common interests. And are brought together to realise we have common interests. And in fact, the theologians, feel what theologians are, am I? No, Paul. Theologians, we have faith, and we say God gives us our faith. And we seek to understand that. Theologians do that, do the study, seeking to understand what it is that we've been given. So when I say theologians, it's people that really study matters of God. And they say that the theologians tell us that they believe God, the God of love, is a playful God. Who really wants to be a worker? They say God's a playful God. And it was in the play that God created us. So when we play, if we play in that image, we're playing into the reality of what God is within in our lives. So
Jump on a mic if
you do want a mic. Am I speaking? Yep, I've got a mic. I told everyone I was a mover. So, all right. So, God is a playful God, and God invites us to be a playful people. And when we play in the right way, we get to know each other. What's some of the things? Have you played a sport? Who's played team sports? Ah, everyone. Cool. Tell me some of the things that you do when you're feeling good. Yeah. But why? Why do you celebrate? What have you done to feel good in the game? What normally happens? You work together to score a goal. Excellent. Go on. Anyone got anything else? Yeah? You're happy? Absolutely. There was a group of Year 8 students, and I asked them, I said, what's the best part about sport? They said, oh, when we win. I said, yeah, that's pretty good, isn't it? Pretty good when you win. What happens when you work together and you play really well? One guy said, you know, sometimes I have to do something that isn't good for me, but it's better for the team. Is that sacrificing your own game? Better for the team? Do you feel good when you do that? Yeah? Sometimes you feel like, hey, I'd rather be the star kicking the goal or whatever, but it's better for the team when you're not. Have you thought about all that? What happens if you do absolutely everything? You stick to the team rules, you play really well, but you just lose. How do you feel? Sorry? Do you really? Yeah? Well, you go home and you're pretty depressed because you've just lost? Yeah? Straight up. But then how long does that disappointment for? 6 hours. Really? Far out. You know, I've got guys at a boxing club and they feel pretty good. Even if they've given their best, but they've lost, they feel not too bad. Deep down, they know on the inside they feel not too bad. How do you guys feel? What about the rest of you that play sport? No, but as a team, if you've stuck to your team rules and you've just been beaten on the better day, it's pretty good. You know what we're finding? We're finding that we're actually playing with God and you're playing happily. When you make sacrifice for yourself, when you give up yourself, you give up the team. And the NFL, the football league in America, yeah, there's a coach there and their team, they play for unconditional love. Can you believe that? Sounds funny, doesn't it? Huh? And who were they? Yeah, I'll give you my business card, which has got my email on it. You email me, I'll find it out, because I've got it written down at the office. But I can't. But they play for unconditional love. You know what they do? Because they say, we sacrifice our game for you. We play to team rules for you, for loving each other. What's that? They're playing with God. So outreach is engaging in God's activity of outreaching to others and inviting them to come in and being in the community and living prosperously together. And that's why play is so good, because they reckon that's part of it. When we play properly, we're doing that. We're engaging in that activity. So let's have a look at someone, that cyclist, that won 8, Lance Armstrong. How was he feeling deep on the inside when he was getting the adulation? Sorry? Well, how was he feeling when he was on talking, was it to Oprah? When he was immersed in tears. Yeah, so it was a stuff up. But he's not really living according to what he's been invited to. Anyway, how are we going for time? Is that about it? Or have I got a bit longer? I'd love to, my boxing ministry. I have a boxing ministry. So part of mine, we've got a boxing club. I used to be Australian boxing champion. I was taken to the Vatican because of our boxing. Yeah, I actually got world rated as an amateur boxer. But I now have a boxing club. So any of you in Adelaide want to come out with the 12 Stars Boxing Club, look us up on Facebook. We're there, 12 Stars Boxing Club. So how, if you want to remember that, 12 Stars of Mary, 12 Stars of David, the 12 tribes of Israel, 12 weight divisions in amateur boxing. So it all seemed to gel well. So that's why we call the 12 Stars for Boxing Club on Facebook. But we have a wide variety of people from 4 right through to 84 that train. Men and women, boys and girls, train with us. We're actually going into the schools of Adelaide and providing self-defence classes in accordance with the Christian virtues. But it does outreach to people, sport. It gets in and provides them a different way of living and a different way of being. I had one guy come up and speak to me 6 years ago, and he said, "I've got myself into a bit of trouble. I'm a drug dealer, and I've been caught dealing drugs. What can I do? I've been told I've got 12 months before I have to go to before I will be found guilty and go to jail. It'll take me 12 months to process." So I said, well, clearly, one, we need to stop selling drugs. Two, you need to find a sport that you like and get engaged in that. You need to find a job and show the judge that you can earn a living without being a drug dealer. And he did that. He actually started boxing and training at our boxing club. He stopped selling drugs, got himself a job, and within 12 months' time, he was able to show the judge that he'd earned $60,000 through his job in 12 months, being a labourer, being a hard worker. And he went on, and the judge said to him, "You've clearly made an effort to try to turn your life around." And he was given a 5-year good behaviour bond. So he wasn't sentenced to go to jail. He was given a 5-year good behaviour bond. Now he knuckled down, he trained really hard at the boxing club. He became a state champion in South Australia. So that was great. But you know what else he found? He found he loved. He had a love of being involved with people. He found he had a love of helping people and helping people to overcome some of their difficulties. So he gave up his job and he went back to study, and now he goes into juvenile detention facilities, and he works with first relief people from prisons, and he says to them, life can be different. You don't have to do that. You don't have to do those things. Life can be different. And he actually shows them a different way of living. Actually, he's given his life to God too. He goes to church every week. Not my church, he isn't a Catholic, but he's returned to the Greek Orthodox Church, and he goes to church every week because on the inside, he found God inviting him into a relationship and found God sustaining him in his relationship. But that's the beauties of sport, isn't it? It can provide a discipline and provide a means of reflecting and a means of finding God on the inside, inviting us to join in that outreach program, reaching out, inviting people in to become friends, be involved in relationship and to be better people. Who's seen that movie that Tom Cruise was in, the sports manager one? It's quite old now. Have you seen that one? Yeah, anyway, he was a really bad person. He was greedy, he wanted money, he wanted everything. And he said, and then he got really challenged and he met this girl and she led him to being a different people. And he said, "I love you, but I need you in my life because you make me a better person." Sports, being involved with people, being involved in relationship with each other, pulling into community, leads us to be better people. Leads us to be like God likes us to be in our human dignity. So I thank you. I've talked long enough now, haven't I? Definitely. Thank you. If you have any questions, I'm happy to answer them for you, but I'm sure I've probably talked on long enough. So cheers, guys. See you.
That was Sports Outreach in East Timor with Sandra Allen Craig and Deacon Anthony Hill. This talk is from the Australian Catholic Youth Festival 2015 and was recorded as a collaboration between XT3 and Cradio. And for more from the Australian Catholic Youth Festival, and for more talks, interviews, and shows, visit cradio.org.au.